The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content. This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Network. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of federal marketing. Now, your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on the Federal News Network. I'm here today with my friend Bob Fry, who is a proposal architect and strategist. Bob, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark.
My pleasure. So let's start with a little background on you, if you would, please.
Absolutely. I first got engaged with proposal development by volunteering. I was working at the time as a technical writer for a federal contractor supporting NASA Goddard Space Flight Center, and I volunteered to work on a $92 million NASA proposal at the company's corporate headquarters in McLean, Virginia. Now, at that time, Mark, I didn't know the difference between a red team and a red light. I came, however, to love the pace of proposal development and being in the breach under severe time constraints. During my experience with that proposal, I made it a point to learn as much as I possibly could about the government's solicitation and the company's proposal process. And then when the company's vice president for strategic planning and business development stood up a new proposal development group, I put in my bid to manage the new group. I got the job, and the company won the $92 million NASA proposal as well. Looking further back in time, I grew up in central Pennsylvania near Hershey. I have lived in Northern Virginia now for 20 years, and I genuinely love to learn and teach and write.
I'm with you on that. I am definitely with you on that. And to that end, if you listeners do not know, Bob has a new book out called Successful Proposal Strategies on the Go, and the last name is Frey. Robert S. Fry. It's a great book, very, very comprehensive book, perhaps the most comprehensive I've seen on the proposal strategy between two covers, Bob.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've seen a few books on the topic over the years. So let's just dive into it. You got engaged as a proposal professional, migrated into the head of the proposal department, but I've written a couple of books.
Yes.
Why did you, what got you into writing this one?
This particular book, I've had six previous proposal books published through Artech House Incorporated in Boston and London. And it had been 12 years since the last edition of that, the sixth edition, came out in 2012. Since I formed my own consultancy, Successful Proposal Strategies, LLC, in 2007, I've supported more than 105 unique customers during that time. And I've observed a broad cross-section of capture management and proposal development practices. Now, without attribution, I sought to present the best practices, the insights, the lessons learned that I had noticed through that experience. Again, as I mentioned earlier, I love the learning process, I love the teaching process, and I love to write. And so it was time. It was time for me to prepare a new book that captured the totality of my experience across 37 years in the federal market space.
Very cool. I love when that happens. So I don't know about you, but oftentimes I write either articles or even when I'm writing a book, a lot of what I'm putting down to clarify what I think for myself. And when I look through it, I either, you know, there's nuances that need to be changed, or I like the direction, but it needs to be fleshed out, or I'm going, what the heck are you thinking? What's the process like for you?
Well, I really like to write in bite-sized chunks. I find that sitting down and trying to write a book from beginning to end doesn't work for me. I need to segment it. And so what I did in Successful Proposal Strategies on the Go was I developed a series of 20 chapters. And in those 20 chapters, I built a series of related vignettes that are based on my real-world experience. And this book, for the first time of all the proposal books I've done, this one is more conversational as opposed to didactic. It's not a this is not a reference book as the sixth edition of my previous book was. And I also had the opportunity through the publisher, which I was very surprised and very pleased, that I was able to include full color photos that I had taken that connect with the content. And this certainly adds visual interest to the book. But I write in terms of areas of interest at the time and then figure out how to cobble them together into an entire book.
Okay. Well, kudos to our tech house for incorporating photos. So, all right, let's migrate on. You told us about the framework, but there's six fundamental functional areas within a contractor's organization. We're going to take one or two of those and then take our break. So start us off.
Yes. Those six functional areas that I view as being essential to winning federal government proposals include business development, capture management, proposal development, knowledge management, infrastructure, and operations. Now, I say function because many smaller businesses do not have the staff with the title of capture manager or business developer. That's why I refer to them as functions. Now, to look at across that group of six, business development, there the focus is on knowing the customer set and the potential competition. Capture management has to do with developing solutions for the proposal response. And the way that I'd like folks to think about solutions is think of solutions as choices. For example, are we going to use a deputy program manager or not in our management approach? Proposal development is about driving the solutions that capture management develops into the proposal response. Knowledge management is about capturing what your company knows and leveraging it, using it to do what I call rapid proposal prototyping. Infrastructure, in this case, think about human resources, contracts administration, the IT department, the facility security officer, and accounting. And then finally, operations, the men and women on the ground supporting your federal and commercial customers. All of these functions must communicate and work together seamlessly.
Cool. All right. I love that. But we're going to take our first break here. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on the Federal News Network. Bob's book, again, is Successful Proposal Strategies on the Go. It is extremely comprehensive. I suggest you bop over to Amazon or your favorite book vendor and grab a copy. And Bob and I will return right after this. Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on the Federal News Network. I'm here today with Bob Fry, author of Successful Proposal Strategies on the Go. Bob, again, congrats on the book.
Thank you.
But let's migrate down our topics. The next one on my list is why compliance is not sufficient to win federal proposals. There's something missing here, right?
Yeah. The way I put it is compliance is necessary, but not sufficient to win. The way I like to think about compliance is using an analogy from the National Hockey League. Every starting player in the 31 NHL teams is an exceptional skater, fully capable of rapid maneuvering, as well as sudden stopping and changing directions on the ice. Skating alone doesn't put the puck in the net enough times to win any given hockey game. By definition, no team can win if they don't score. And scoring every game takes passion, planning, teamwork, execution at the right time, and discipline. Add to these expecting to win and some good luck. These same things apply to proposaling. You have to want to win more than your competitors. You've got to think it, feel it, embrace it, taste it, and own it throughout the entire business development lifecycle. In reality, most proposals are compliant. But in single award situations, there's only one winner. So my guidance to businesses of all sizes is throttle down the level of energy directed towards compliance. Of course, certainly be compliant, but compliance should not stand as the be-all and end-all focus of the entire proposal development team.
Okay. Passion and knowledge are key. I'm shocked. If you don't like what you do, it becomes palpable to those you're talking to. And if one of those happens to be on the government side of the equation, that's going to be a big black mark against you. I can see that. I can feel that. So the next topic we have here is, what do government evaluators, regardless of civilian defense, law enforcement, intel, whatever, what do they care about when they're reviewing a proposal?
Well, most folks whom I encounter in the federal market space talk in terms of themes, discriminators, or major marketing messages. All of those don't matter at all to federal evaluators. Federal agencies care about three things: strengths, weaknesses, and deficiencies. Strengths that are aligned with the evaluation factors for award, that is Section M in a federal request for proposal, strengths that are aligned to Section M, that should be capture and proposal team's number one goal, is maximizing the number of strengths that appear in source selection statements or source selection decision documents. So it's not about our themes. Again, government does not care. That's not how they evaluate industry's proposals.
Okay. I don't hear much about themes anymore, and maybe that's why. But then again, it does pop up every now and again.
It does. I work with companies of all sizes, from small businesses to mid-tiers to Fortune 50 companies, and I still hear it. In fact, I've done training specifically for a multinational company on a NASA proposal and teaching them about NASA's source selection process and focusing in on strengths and weaknesses and deficiencies. And after the training, I was somewhat shocked to hear that they plan to have a theme development meeting soon thereafter. So it's like that was fascinating to me that those kinds of practices and beliefs are hard to shed.
Time to call Burt Bacharach and do a little background music. Yeah, you know, you can lead a horse to water, my friend. But and to that end, you've done a lot of teaching as well, right?
That's correct. I've done a tremendous amount of proposal development training nationwide, and also through various universities. For example, UCLA. But I've participated in federal government organization seminars that were offered, for example, through the Department of Energy Small Business Utilization Office, NASA's Mentor Protégé Program. And I also do a lot of training for individual companies. And importantly, I've done training for the government, specifically under contract to NASA at Kennedy Space Center, where I helped principal investigators and co-principal investigators to understand how to sell the strengths of their facility and the assets of their facility. Because the government over time has not had to. Now, more and more, there is a necessity for it. But the government largely does not know how to sell to itself. And so that was what I was there to help them with.
Oh, cool. Well, you're right. They don't. And it's a good thing they have somebody to turn to. You've inferred a couple of times that certain shops like NASA have maybe a nuanced evaluation process. How important is it to understand that on that evaluation process that one size does not fit all? Obviously, the Intel community is going to have something radically different than a pure civilian agency. But you've mentioned NASA a couple of times. I know that that certain parts of the Navy definitely do, a whole different evaluation process when you come to the cyber arena. But give me a thumbnail on how important it is to really understand how a particular agency does the eval.
What I have found over time is that two agencies stand out above the rest by far in terms of the sophistication of their solicitation documents. Number one is the Air Force, and number two is NASA. Now, one of the things that I have invested a great deal of time and energy in is reviewing source selection statements and source selection decision documents to capture exactly what a given agency deems to be strengths in a particular situation, which is critical to understand. Because if, for example, I'm working on an effort right now that is pretty much a pass-fail, an acceptable, unacceptable type of situation. In that case, there's certain things that compliance takes on a greater role in that particular situation. But in those competitive proposal efforts that involve the Federal Acquisition Regulation, the FAR, we need to understand as proposal professionals, we need to understand how the government is going to apply the FAR to their specific situation. And you'll see, particularly through looking at source selection statements and source selection decision documents, that agencies have different flavors of what they value and how they emphasize the evaluation factors for award and how they weight them. And so it's critical to understand what the agency you're pursuing work with, how they think, and how they evaluate. And the best place to find that is from their own documentation. Now, again, some agencies are less likely to release those source selection statements, but that's where I find going to the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, findings from protests that I find great insight into how agencies think in the protest documents. So those are several sources that I mine routinely.
Cool. All right, we're going to take our next break. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on the Federal News Network. I'm here today with Bob Fry, author of Successful Proposal Strategies on the Go. You can find Bob on LinkedIn. And you can find him also, Bob, your website, please.
www.proposal23.com.
Cool. So find Bob, connect, start picking his brain if you want to win more or hire him. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on the Federal News Network. I'm here today with Bob Fry, author of Successful Proposal Strategies on the Go. Find Bob on LinkedIn and reach out to connect. So we touched on this a little bit, but characterize the look and feel of a winning federal proposal.
First of all, the way I invite people to look at this is think of your proposal as a mirror in which your customer must see themselves. That is their mission, their strategic and business objectives, their requirements, their stakeholders, their governance structure, and your understanding of that framework, their as-is environment and your perception of it, and their strategic and operational challenges and how you will address them effectively and efficiently now and over the entire period of performance of the contract. Importantly, make the customer feel at home in your proposal. You do that by ensuring that there is exacting and visible mapping to the RFP requirements through headings and subheadings, the numbering or alphanumeric scheme, and parenthetical cross-references to the solicitation that appear in the actual proposal document. Your proposal must really answer the what's in it for me question from the government standpoint. An excellent way to do this is to align your company's validated strength with the evaluation factors for award found in Section M of the RFP. Illustrating this alignment in a table or figure is a really good idea. Winning proposals are also characterized by relevant success stories, including intangible assets, such as accessibility on evenings and weekends, an established record of highly ethical business practices, responsiveness and a strong sense of urgency, and anticipation of your customer's diverse needs. Now, text must augment and support the graphics and tables. Ideally, there should be at least one graphical element on every page of your proposal. Think text boxes or call-out boxes, a small set of value-added icons and drop caps. There's a lot of different ways to bring that page beyond just a wall of words, which you do not want to do.
How important is it not to use those things, you know, you Google an idea, you click on images, and you come up with something generic? How important is it to build something that is really germane to the client on that image side?
Well, I see a lot of evidence of folks using Google when it comes to a risk management approach, for example. And out at Google Images, there is a number of very standard, generic-looking risk management cycles, which add no value to what you're trying to bring to that particular federal customer. You want to make sure that whatever graphic you include in your proposal, first of all, is not a gratuitous graphic, meaning that if you're proposing to the Army to have just a silhouette of a warfighter, doesn't add any value. That's a gratuitous figure. But the goal would be to customize an approach, a process, a methodology, a technique that speaks directly to the requirements in the solicitation document, speaks directly to what you've learned about the customer from interacting with them during the business development lifecycle, and making them feel at home in your proposal by using their lexicon, their color palettes. I distinctly remember interviewing an incumbent program manager on a job out at Fort Huachuca, Arizona. What that person said is that his task is to clear the brush for the contracting officer and the contracting officer's technical representative. Now, during editing in this particular company, the editors felt that clear the brush was not the King's English, and so they took it out. And it was ultimately put back in because, again, we want to make sure the customer feels at home in our proposal using their terminology, their color scheme, their phraseology, show that we understand the governance documents that impact their work.
Yeah, and for the uninitiated, it is not difficult to use a wrong image. I don't think this happened in a proposal, but it did happen in an advertisement in a major trade publication. They were advertising to win Navy business, and they used an Air Force jet, not a Navy jet.
I see that where I'll see images of the wrong aircraft, for example, legacy aircraft. I see that with NASA procurements where companies will still use a space shuttle as an image. The space shuttle program has long ago ceased operating. So you have to be very attuned to the imagery that you do include in your proposal, because it can send the message of, hey, I don't understand your mission. I don't understand your current operational cadence. I don't understand your goals and objectives, the technologies you're using today. So it's very, very important to make sure that that particularly images are correct ones.
I agree completely, but I love when it happens publicly because it's so funny.
it is.
So one of the companies that I'm working with right now is very big in the commercial arena. They're internationally known. Their software is used a lot of places, but they're new to GovCon. So for companies like that, thumbnail the major differences between the federal proposal process and those that you would find in commercial entities.
Well, I have experience working obviously on the federal proposals, but also with commercial organizations and international governments as well as businesses. One of the things that first of all, I see a lot of similarities across those given areas, meaning that when it comes to demonstrating understanding, approach, and value to the customer, and as well as time to value, that really is very much uniform across federal, commercial, and international customers. What, of course, is very different in the federal, U.S. federal world, is that once a final RFP is released, in some cases even before that, there is to be no communication with that particular federal agency about a given opportunity. It's illegal to do so, and you don't want to even go near trying to broach that topic. However, I supported a major international firm who was pursuing work in Europe with a large insurance organization. Now, that insurance organization actually encouraged my customer to meet with the insurance company on a regular basis once the final RFP was out to make sure that they were on target with what they were going to be proposing in their proposal document. So it can be a very, very different world insofar as commercial and international proposaling. Obviously, most of the U.S. federal proposal efforts, most of them, not all, are guided and driven by the Federal Acquisition Regulation, the FAR. That's, for example, why federal RFPs have sections A through M. They never have a section R or X. And that's due to the uniform contract format that appears in the FAR. So with commercial and international organizations, there's a much greater range of how those solicitation documents can look and how they're structured. But again, the commonality is you've got to demonstrate understanding, you've got to demonstrate approach, and you've got to illustrate how you're going to bring them value and over what time frame.
Cool. We're going to take our last break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on the Federal News Network. Bob Fry and I shall return right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on the Federal News Network. I'm here today with Bob Fry, author of Successful Proposal Strategies on the Go. Buy the book, connect with Bob on LinkedIn, and reach out if you need help on your proposal. Bob, let's start the last segment with in the latest book, you have The Power of Proposal Win Bonuses. What makes this so powerful?
Mark, I worked in an organization for 9 years that had a very structured proposal win bonus program. It had such a positive impact on people throughout the company nationwide, being much more willing to participate in proposal development than they otherwise would have been. And particularly today, where you have experienced proposal staff who are in high demand and short supply, you want to give those individuals a reason to stay with your organization. Now, the key word is win. It doesn't matter that people worked hard on a proposal that was not a winner. The proposal win bonus program was only paid out when the company I worked for was prime and was the winner. And they made a big deal about it. They rented a conference room at a local hotel, and there was always food and beverages, and there were senior management folks there recognizing the key proposal participants. People received a certificate with the name of the proposal that they helped win. They received that public recognition within the company, and they also got a check. Now, that check, the level of the check was determined by the size of the opportunity that had been won. And by the way, this proposal win bonus program was executed within 30 days of contract award, not contract start, contract award. And people who participated in that, and in fact, when I received my offer letter from the company, it was built into the offer letter. So it was communicated to everyone in the organization that you participate with proposals, good things happen when we win.
Now, that is a significant incentive. I remember when Accenture bumped an incumbent, I think it was the Visa program at State, and this goes back 20 plus. But I remember the guy who led the charge for Accenture not only got one huge bonus, I never knew the number, nor did I want to, but he also got a significant bump in his position within the company. So it can happen, and should, again, depending on the size of the contract. And we were talking a multi-billion dollar deal here with the State Department. It was pretty cool, fun to watch from the outside, probably more fun to watch from the inside. Let's talk a little bit about the executive summary. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, I would strongly recommend that organizations begin crafting the executive summary as early in the proposal development lifecycle as possible, preferably when you have either a second draft RFP or, I'd say at the second draft, if there is a second draft, or even at the first draft, because you can certainly go about building an executive summary and then keep maturing it over time throughout the proposal development lifecycle and it, finalizing it after the last major review cycle. But my recommendation to my customers is that they compose what I call a win strategy white paper to start, which is the precursor to an executive summary. This is a capture management responsibility with input from knowledgeable business development folks and program folks and executive staff. But the Win Strategy white paper should be 2 to 3 pages, no more, but it should be in full-scale narrative, not just bullet points. And it ought to cover every major area of the proposal that's going to be evaluated and what your company's offer will look like in that particular area. Now, there are times when the government requires an executive summary, and sometimes even stipulating that it be a standalone volume. In other cases, there's no explicit requirement, so we need to make sure that whatever we put in as an introduction or an overview fits under a section that will get scored and evaluated. You don't want to have a standalone executive summary that an evaluator just passes over. So we need to make sure we're getting credit for the good content that we put in there.
Okay. When it's required, I'm assuming there is a word count or a length?
Normally, it's what I see is 1 to 2 pages.
So you got to be succinct.
Yes. Yes. It just can't be random information off of websites and so forth. It's got to be targeted. And one of the things I always recommend to include in an executive summary is an evidence of strength table, where you have the Section M evaluation factors for award in the left-hand column, and in the right-hand column, evidence of strengths. Now, you don't want that to be a page and a half, but you want it to be the most salient elements you want the government evaluators to come away with as being the first thing that they read.
Okay, so that would be your graphic.
That'd be the graphic on that particular page.
Okay, so I have one final question, and that would be, if somebody's just starting out in proposal development, give us your best advice.
Well, I always guide people who are in that situation to think in terms of being a human sponge. That is, learn as much as you can about the federal acquisition lifecycle, about your company's proposal processes, about taking a look at your company's past proposals, and really becoming familiar with the activities within your company that support proposal development. I would also suggest that you join and participate in the local chapter of the Association of Proposal Management Professionals, or APMP. It's also critical to recognize that proposal development is absolutely not a 9-to-5 position, but that's okay. Why? Because your focus should be on compressing the time to value for yourself as a member of the proposal team. Another thing you can do is become aware of tools that are available publicly. For example, there's a software platform called InfoSquirrel that comes out of Riverscape Software in Ohio, and it's designed to help you as a proposal writer to prepare better and more effective proposals. So there are tools that you can certainly leverage, and you want to keep your eyes and ears open insofar as what more can I learn about my craft. I always view proposal development as a calling. It to me, it was never a job, never a career. It was a calling. Still is.
Well, it sounds like we share something, because there's always something new on the marketing front here in GovCon, and there are always nuances to learn in proposal and capture. So, Bob, thank you very much for joining me today.
You are most welcome. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Podcasting is not my day job. I operate at the intersection of thought leadership, content, and LinkedIn. I help companies and individuals build subject matter expert positions in the federal market to build stronger pipelines. If you'd like to discuss this, drop me a line at markamtower@gmail.com or send me an email through LinkedIn. And please share this podcast with people who will benefit from it and like it on the podcast platform of your choice. And finally, thank you for listening to Amtower Off Center.
You've been listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Network. Tune in Mondays at noon or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.